Welcome to the BOTUS podcast. I am Jacek from BOTUS, and today I am bringing to you Dr. Orcan Yüksel from Germany. Orcan has a private practice in Frankfurt. He's a very experienced surgeon in the field. But not only that, he has been also involved into research projects with the University of Adana in Turkey. But above all, Orcan is considered to be one of the inventors of the bone ring and the bone ring technique. So he is very known all around the world for that. And today he will be interviewed by my colleague Natalie. Natalie has been working for BOTUS for more than 4 years now. She is an expert in the field of allografts and she knows Orcan very, very well. That is because together they have introduced the bone ring in North America and in Canada. So they have been traveling a lot together to congresses, to events, etc. So let me hand over the word now to Natalie.
Thank you, Jacek, for the kind introduction. Welcome, Orcan. How are you?
Hello, Natalie. Yes, we have traveled together to many countries to introduce the bone technique. And I think it was very successful if you see all around the colleagues how they started to treat well with the bone rings. It's really a pleasure to see this kind of success stories.
So, Orcan, for the listeners who don't know the technique, the bone ring technique, can you tell us a little bit what it is about?
Yes. Basically, in case you want to make a vertical bone augmentation, this is limited with granulates. Therefore, we started to think how we can create a scaffold. Of course, the first thing at that time, Bernd Giesenhagen, you know, my colleague, started to take from the chin or retromolar area bone rings, bone blocks in the shape of a ring with a trephine, and made a hole in the middle and implanted together with the implant so that the implant was like a fixation screw. And in the same time, the fixture device for later prosthetic. So the advantage of the technique is that you can perform the augmentation procedure with the implant placement at the same time. Of course, this reduced the surgical time and the operation numbers as well for the patient comfort, also the pain. People don't need to be operated second time, almost with a similar procedure. So it worked at that time very good, but the technique was very new for many people. There was a lot of small details, what has to be considered. And then we started to cooperate. At that time, it was many years ago, I believe 14 years ago, something. And we said how we can develop the education first, step-by-step protocol, all the details. And when we were successful with the bone ring and after probably 1,000 cases and also 5 years result, we started to think what are the problems of the colleagues all around the world. They like the technique, they understand the technique, but most of them, they said, the patient doesn't want to donate his own bone from another region. So basically, they say, oh, don't cut my chin or somewhere. Can you do it with a glass, with a bone substitute from somewhere? And then we started to make our own researches, how we can get allograft blocks, cut them as rings, in a ring shape, in a cylinders, and make a hole in the middle, and then place this allograft instead of the autogenous bone. So that was the idea was born, actually, to meet BOTUS.
So this is how you got in touch with BOTUS. When was that? Can you tell us a little bit how this cooperation started?
I believe it was, I have to look, but it was 10 years ago. It was like this. I called Dr. Tadic. We knew each other from his former working. I called him. I said, where I can meet you? He said, on the IDS. He said, yeah, I will come. We will talk. And then with Oliver Biedenstein and Dražen Tadic, we had a half an hour meeting. I said, gentlemen, I have an idea. It works. We are doing that. And you also are offering in your company allografts, which I heard they are not from cadaver. They are from living donors. This is very interesting for me because I didn't want to be publicity in a newspaper. Patients got some infections or diseases after successful implant procedures. So that's why I said the living donor with several tests, it sounds very good for me because we Germans, we have no clue about allografts at that time. I mean, nobody was using it. Even in Germany, it was not possible to just get it. And then we started to get the blocks from the tissue bank in Austria. We went to Austria. We said, we need the rings. They say, how we can do it? We just together experimented how to cut, how to process the. So in the end, as probably you know, we met each other a couple of years ago. We had a beautiful, perfect product with a very nice quality, freeze-dried and processed allograft material with a certain structure because we use the only sponges part of the bone. And this comes from actually patients that are getting the hip replacement. And the femoral head has almost zero cortical bone. It's just a thin layer and the whole part is, let's say, a little ball, and you can cut it and get very good high-quality sponges bone. So that was the first.
Just one thing to for all our listeners who don't know, Dr. Tadic and Oliver Biedenstein are the founders of BOTIS. BOTIS was founded in 2008 in Berlin. We have a cooperation with our tissue bank in Krems, the cells and tissue bank in Austria, that are processing our human tissue line MaxGraft there. This is also where MaxGraft bone rings come from. Okay. But to go back to the question to the rings, so when I started at BOTIS, the rings were already produced in a way we were already cooperating with you, Orchan, and Bernd. But before you mentioned, you mainly did autologous bone grafting from the hip or the chin. How did this product, MaxGraft Bone Ring, change your way of treating patients?
As I told you, after having it, almost 1,000 cases experience with the autogenous bone, and we were sure that this technique works perfectly, and realized there can be allograft rings a possibility to replace the autogenous bone and avoid the second surgical site. We were not sure that the bone rings with allografts were really so successful like autogenous bone rings, because, you know, we have a dogma in our heads. We believe only on the golden standard. And we said, let's start where we can not harvest enough bone from the mouth, so from the oral areas. There are certain patients, they need 8 rings. You have to restore whole the maxilla and mandibula. And this amount of autogenous bone rings you cannot get from the patient. So to hospitalize them, to open the calvaria and somewhere else. And these techniques, of course, exist. This is possible. But we said we must be able to help those patients also. And it started very early that one case was very successful with the allografts. It was basically out of the situation that the patient said, if you have an alternative, I would like to try it. And then we started to use it more often. And then once we got this product really in the box, in a packaging, and put in our clinics, then we were wondering if the patient likes more a piece of bone from the shelf or from autogenous. And suddenly we realized we are not taking any more autogenous bone. We are not harvesting autogenous bone. We are just taking the ready usable bone rings, the allografts, and the success.
So it's safe to say that the patients usually prefer using the product out of the box, so the allografts, correct?
If you offer them the two choices, they 95% people are saying, of course, I like this idea to use, let's say, a safe product without any paid for me. And there are patients, they say, no, I mean, I would give you, donate you my own bone if you can do it. There's still an option, we can do it. But more and more, we realize we don't use anymore the autogenous bone. We know it, we have all this technique, all the instruments, but we don't use it anymore. We are just using the allografts. So, and then colleagues all around the world started to experiment with this. They said, if it works, then we can also try. But there is a clue. I mean, if you are not familiar with the vertical bone augmentation procedures, and you cannot mobilize the soft tissue and cover it tension-free, but you still can fix the implant with a bone ring. So then people started to have a certain closure problems. And with these closure problems, they started also to have some reopening failures. And this is not nice if you perform a surgery after 3 day patient is coming because it was not covered properly and they have exposure.
Yeah, so we also know that with bigger augmentation procedures, we need kind of a good skill level of surgeon that they can cover the flap, mobilize the soft tissue. That's why, for example, in the US and Canada, we introduced this product with proper education because we know that it needs a certain level of skill. But I think this is valid for all bigger augmentation procedures, that the crucial part of the bone augmentation is actually the soft tissue management. Don't you agree?
Of course. This was the reason why when we went to North America, I said not even one piece of bone delivered to a clinician without proper education. But of course, in America, the colleagues are working a little bit different. They are mostly doing what they really can do. And Americans are very familiar with the allografts. And I was very much impressed that we had all the times good, skilled, and experienced surgeons. They understood what they are doing very well. And then they were then afterwards very successful, of course. But if I just compare to you the both techniques. To harvest the bone from areas of the chin or retromolar or the os palatinum is, if you do it often, then it's an easy procedure. Sometimes you can think, why I need something else. But in case you are in a hurry and you want to place an implant and you realize, oh, I'm missing here 4 millimeters bone. I didn't expect such a less bone here in this region. So then you are not prepared. You didn't talk to your patient about harvesting from the chin, etc. Then you are in a trouble. So this situation, of course, can be avoided if you make a proper examination with 3D pictures and then you would see everything. But as you know, all around the world, colleagues, the more experienced they are, the more they say, I make the first cut and we will see what we can do. And for them is a beautiful tool. They have couple rigs in the drawer. They open it, they take, they solve their problems. And that's why, first of all, it is for unforeseen cases where you need certain kind of vertical stable augmentation material as a scaffold with a high regeneration potential, like the MaxGraft, allograft. Then you are really, it's a life-saving instrument. But mostly in our clinics, we are not using the lifesavers. We are just planning ahead. We make also 3D examination. We show the patient exactly where they need certain vertical augmentation procedures in order to get the functionality or the aesthetic. And then afterwards, we are planning exactly how many rings we have, how much millimeter we have to use these rings, with which length and which diameter. Also, we learned after making so many autogenous bondings, you need only two sizes, 6 and 7 millimeters. With 6 and 7 millimeter bone rings, you can solve all the augmentation procedures, including the sinus. So, of course, I would like to a little bit explain what we are talking, what has bone rings to do in the sinus, but maybe you have some question.
So, I have actually two questions after what you discussed. So you said when you harvest bone, it's not really predictable. You also, do you see differences in the quality of the bone when you harvest it? And then second question maybe goes together. Since you do a lot of digital planning, is it for you better predictable to use a prefabricated ring? Because you mentioned you have a 6 and 7 millimeter, then you also know what height the piece of bone has. So what is in that aspect?
Of course, this is the benefits of having a prefabricated material is that you always know your bone ring is 10 millimeter long, 6 and 7 millimeter outside diameter, and your implant can be 3.3, 3.5 for the smaller ones, and for the bigger 7 millimeter, you can go up to 4.1 millimeter implants. So another implant size I'm actually not using so often in the clinic, because more than 4.1 millimeter or 4.5 millimeter maximum, you don't need to place this bigger diameter implants like 5.5 or 6, in case you are doing a vertical bone augmentation procedure for extraction sockets, this is fine. You can even use their bigger, larger diameters. But many colleagues, if they see the lack of, let's say, bone in the extraction socket, in the molar region especially, they take a ring, they place in the extraction socket after preparing with a trephine the edges of the cavity, placing a ring and fixing into the ring the implant in the extraction socket with 1 or 2 millimeter apical, let's say, grip that gives the implant the necessary primary stability. So you see, a lot of clinicians are using in a different way. But for me and for Band was always the first choice why we use the bone rings was always vertical bone augmentation, not lateral augmentation. Lateral augmentation means if I have enough vertical height, but a very thin bone crest that I would like to extend laterally a couple more millimeters, let's say 3 millimeters, in order to place a proper implant, they have enough sufficient bone around. So this is not the real indication for the bone rings. If you have vertical height, you should place a bone block or bone shield. If you need stability, or you make it with the particulated material, with under a membrane. You can use the umbrella technique, or there are a lot of different techniques for the lateral augmentation. But for the vertical augmentation, is I believe the ring technique is one of the first choices.
I also think it's very elegant because you already place an implant, so you save also the patient time to get his restoration. But in what indications do you use the bone ring technique the most in your dental clinic?
I can just say all vertical procedures. If, let's say, in the frontal region, a patient lost a tooth and the bone had a resorption 5 millimeter. So to get the aesthetic back, to get the same amount of soft tissue around, you need hard tissue. So here you can easily make a vertical bone augmentation. If you have a high atrophic jaw and then you are not able to place an implant in the region lower jaw 5, 6, 7, then you can easily make vertical bone augmentation. If you have 3 millimeters of bone above the nervus alveolaris inferior, then you can fix your implant almost stable if you prepare carefully, that the implant gets a primary stability and the bone ring just covers the other 5 millimeter, which you probably need to restore functionally the patient. So if you have a 5 millimeter of the bone rings and another 3 millimeter of the residual bone, so that you can place an 8 millimeter of implant, I would say you solve the patient's problem in terms of functionality. But also, we, since many years, are treating patients with the sinus augmentation procedures with the bone rings. How we come to this idea? As you know, in the sinus, if you have enough bone to fix the implant, then you can augment the rest in the sinus with particulated material, and it works. I have never seen any, problematical sinus lifting procedure because of the material what you use inside. So with the Cerabone, you have a very good material, a bovine product that is working really perfectly in the sinus and also on the top of our bone rings. Everywhere that we place this Cerabone, we have almost after 6 months, a perfect bone infiltration. In the sinus, it works.
So just for our listeners who don't know, Cerabone is a bovine substitute, what you already mentioned, that is manufactured only from two natural ingredients, heat and water, and it maintains the bone volume for bone augmentation defects, especially in the sinus floor. So we recommend it for sinuses or contouring defects and where you want to have ultimate volume stability. But sorry.
Exactly. So, no, this is perfect explanation because I'm assuming everybody already in the world should know Cerabone. Of course, this is a bovine xenograft material, but the product is probably one of the safest bovine products because we know that the bovine bones, because of some diseases, were not so easily possible to get. As I know, you are getting also from a certain region of the world where no diseases in this type of animals exist.
But yeah, we also have a bone from New Zealand because there haven't been any cases of BSE. Mad cow disease is correct. Thank you, Ochan.
Yeah, but the most important thing is the product is very good in terms of hydrophilicity and stability. So it has the holes, what we are expecting from bone substitute, and in the holes they are growing the vessels. The vessels are bringing the osteoclast and the osteoblast, and after 5-6 months I see very high infiltration of bone cells, and this material become a part of the new builded bone. So in the sinus it works very well, somewhere else it works very well, but the only problem is if you have not enough bone on the bottom of the sinus, most of the dentists are making a two-stage approach. So they first open the flap, open the window, place the biomaterial inside, cover everything, and then wait another, depends on the, let's say, patient's age, 6-9 months, even longer. After that, they are opening again the same area and drilling and hoping that the material is hard enough to get the implant fixed. So what we do with our bone rings, or with your bone rings,
Yeah,
we are placing
the... You're the father of the bone rings.
Okay, I cannot say my bone rings. So what we are doing with the bone rings, we are placing in the sinus, fixing the implant into the sinus, into the ring, in the sinus. So basically the bone ring with the implant could fall in into sinus, but the implant has a cover screw. If you place a larger diameter of very thin fixation cap, I would call it fixation cap, then you can avoid that the implant with the bone ring falls into the sinus, and can also not fall out because it is with a large bone block or bone cylinder in the sinus fixed. So basically you use the thin layer of the bone on the crest of the sinus to fix with a screw the bone ring and the implant in a position that is also a rigid fixation. After 6 months in a one surgery, your implant with the bone ring is completely osseointegrated and completely healed. So it saves, I would say, minimum 6 months time for each of the patients are coming with a very atrophic, let's say, maxilla and a huge sinus. So this is very, very nice procedure, but we had to make a, I would say, a study, but not an animal study. We already have success in the human. So we had to make the study, and this we made. You mentioned the university in Adana. There I have great friends. They are working with me, and we did three studies until now, which we will publish two of them in a very, very short time. One already we published. And maybe I should mention this a little bit, the details, but you had a question.
Yeah, the question was, I know that you are involved in a study comparing autografts and allografts in sinuses in patients. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that.
Basically, now in the sinus, not the animal study, in the sinus. So the idea was very simple. We are having a lot of sinus patients coming in, and who has less than 3 millimeters of residual bone, we place them into the two-stage protocol. This was not a big problem for the patient. But now we started the boring project in the sinus, and we made a randomized clinical study that we generate randomized the indication for the patient who will be treated with allogenic bone rings in the sinus and who will be treated with autogenic material. Of course, if the patient wants to wait another let's say, two-stage protocol for the two-stage work, another 6 months to get the second procedure done. We are not against. We are just offering. There is such a possibility. But what people cannot choose, our patients, to get the allograft ring or the autogenous ring. That's why it's a randomized. And so we compared after 6 months the volume. So we made after the implant placement the volumetric measurements on the in the sinus with both materials, of course, with Cerebone as a filler. And we measured the ISQ values, which was very low. And then after 6 months, we measured again the volume with a digital volume tomography and also the ISQ values. So what I can say you just without going into the detail of the study, this will be published. I would say we will submit it in the next month. So we have, we can expect in the next couple months it will be published. There is, even with the allograft material, better results. I know this is hard to believe, but it is like this.
There's also studies indicating that the bone quality in the end after having the remodeling process of the allograft is actually the same or on the same level as an autograft. So maybe it's not so so much of a surprise. But yeah, we're looking forward to the publication. But maybe we can discuss one last publication that was already published 2018, also about the difference about autogenous and allogenic bone rings, but in an animal studies, where you had a look into the resorption pattern of both materials. Maybe you can tell us a little bit what you found out there.
Yes, this is also something what was, in my opinion, not a necessity to prove that the allogenic material works, but we had a need to show a publication that this is a safe protocol, because still people are discussing if allogenic material can replace autogenous bone. So for this discussion, you need the proof of the bone implant contact and the bone volume after the augmentation procedures. For this, we planned an animal study. So we created two defects. One defect is 3 millimeter in the bone, and we placed a 5 millimeter ring into this hole so that only 2 millimeter is showing above the bone crest. So that means we have a 2 millimeter vertical augmentation group. At the other group, we said we are creating only 1 millimeter hole, and then we are placing a 5 millimeter ring. So we had a 4 millimeter vertical height to be compensated after 4 months or 8 months. So we did the same with autogenous and allograft. The autogenous bone we harvested also from the same animal on the same surgical site. We made this study on the one leg, so to avoid also some problems for the animal. And we took care of this animal 4 months, and it was also proven from the ethic committee in the University of Chukrova. So after 4 months, when we first had our specimens, we made the microscopic analysis, histological analysis, and we realized that the autogenous bone 2 millimeter augmentation was well-organized mature lamellar bone with perfect hydration system and no resorption. So I have to... I mean, you can find this in the publication. We didn't use any Cerebone on the top. We just covered it by a membrane to avoid some infiltration of muscles or of any soft tissue, because it's not so easy to open everything very big and then cover everything very precisely with the periosteum. So the allograft, of course, didn't show a complete resorption, and we saw the new bone penetration into the allograft. But all the situation changed after 8 months, because we made the same analysis after 4 months in a certain group of the animals, and in other animals we keep them for 8 months after. And after 8 months, we found that the allograft 4 millimeter group, which was the worst one that we could expect, had the same bone areas in the percentage, close to 70%, like autogenous bone.
So we can kind of confirm that allografts are a reliable alternative to autologous bone. Would you agree?
After 8 months, we didn't see any difference.
So yeah, I think you and your colleagues can be very confident using this sort of material.
We saw on the autogenous bone, because of the lack of usage, of course, we couldn't load the implants 8 months long. We saw a drop of the bony area approximately 20%. So the very promising 2 millimeter autogenous group was the worst ones in these 4 different groups. This is the same situation, comparable with the same numbers with the bone implant contact, which is the most important in our field, how much bone implant contact you can generate with the implant. So in the sinus, you can be sure, and this is the study proves that, the short waiting time, the combination with the allograft in the sinus, which gives a better osseo integration or turnover process with the implants, shows or gives us trustable measurements to load the implant in the molar region. And this is very important. So we will publish this. I hope you will send to the interested colleagues the results.
Yes, we are looking forward to the publication of the sinus. And for those who are interested, of course, feel free to reach out to us. We are happy to provide this study on animals. Thank you so much for taking the time to explain us all the tricks and details on bone ring technique.
Only what I want to say, the last words, because these are difficult times of the coronavirus and many colleagues are at home or working a little bit less. It looks like that the full occupancy will not so be easy coming back. So I would offer, we are making a webinar. We are planning to make a webinar with some demonstration. And we should announce it on the VOTIS website, or we have also another website, bonering.dental. We can together announce this webinar and then should be able to do it in July or June. Depends on the time situation. Maybe that will be also some nice support.
Yeah, we are looking forward to a webinar. Stay tuned and stay healthy, everybody.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah, stay healthy. Thank you. Thank you very much.